You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's podcast, we talk about the election and the results from that, basically a challenge to Republicans. And for our main topic, we discuss the Carrington event and some of the things you could do to prepare for an event like that. In today's worldview segment, I want to talk about the elections and the results. I have a news article in front of me, and it's from AP, and it's out of Washington. It says, a weakened President Barack Obama and emboldened Republican leaders in Congress began adjusting to a new political dynamic. The election results were resounding. GOP won control of the Senate and strengthened its hold on the House as a series of Democratic-leaning states fell under control of new Republican governors. All right, so we obviously, if you have been paying attention at all, you understand the 2014 midterms are now in the rearview mirror, and the Republicans have gained control of the Senate. So now they hold all of Congress with a pretty strong majority overall. Now, I have to tell you that I'll ask the question, am I happy that the Democrats have been removed from power of the Senate? Yes, I am absolutely happy that they are no longer in power. Am I ecstatic that the Republicans now hold the majority in the Senate? Not really. And I'll tell you why. Because my confidence in them is very low. And I think that's can be said for a lot of people. If there are people out there that are just ecstatic and accelerating and it's like, yeah, now we're going to really solve some problems, I've got to tell you, the Republicans' track record is not very good. And the reason I'm hard on the Republicans is because they actually say one thing but do another. Okay, the Democrats aren't hiding who they are, to be perfectly honest with you. So don't misunderstand me. I'm not supporting Democrats at all, unless, of course, you like big government, globalism, Marxism, those types of things. Well, then Democrats are great. But I am not – my confidence level in Republicans is very, very low, and that's just – I'm just being honest. There's a handful of them that I like, but other than that, they're really big government bureaucrats as well. And so what I want to do now is just take a look at the GOP's preamble from their platform, because I think this is important. Now that they have control, well, guess what? Show us that you're actually going to do something. Because here's an important principle to learn for the Christian, and that is that what you really believe is played out in your actions. Okay, that's what you really believe. Not what you say, but what you actually do. That's where your beliefs stem. You could say what you believe all day long, but if your actions show otherwise, then it's very clear that you don't actually believe that. And so I'm holding Republicans accountable and to a higher standard because they claim lots of good things, but yet they don't do them. Okay, and when Republicans had control of Congress the last time, what did they do? What did they actually do? Not what they said, what did they do? They grew the government. Okay, so here's a couple things from the preamble. Now, granted, this is the 2012 platform, but these principles are things that Republicans talk about all the time. Our nation faces unprecedented uncertainty with great fiscal and economic challenges. Agreed. And under the current administration has suffered through the longest and most severe economic downturn since the Great Depression. Agreed. Put simply, the times call for trustworthy leadership and honest talk about the challenges we face. The problem is, the Republicans have not done this. Our nation and our people cannot afford the status quo. The problem is, this is exactly what the Republicans have done. We must begin anew with profound changes in the way government operates, the way it budgets, taxes, and regulates. The problem is, the Republicans have not done this. Jefferson's vision of a wise and frugal government must be restored. The problem is the Republicans have not done this. Skipping down a little further, it says, "We possess an owner's manual, the Constitution of the United States, the greatest political document ever written. That sacred document shows us the path forward. Trust the people, limit government, respect federalism, guarantee opportunity, not outcomes, adhere to the rule of law. These are all great principles. Reaffirm that our rights come from God, are protected by government, and that the only just government is one that truly governs with the consent of the governed." So I'll say once again to the Republicans who now control all of Congress, do what you say you believe. Limit government. Trust people. Adhere to the rule of law. Respect federalism. Do not grow government. You talk about smaller government. Do that. We shall see. I think Republicans should immediately implement common sense legislation that implements these principles of smaller government. If the president chooses to veto that legislation, then let him explain it to the American people. As for Republicans, live what you say you believe and implement wise and frugal government. In today's main topic, I want to talk about the Carrington event. Now, the Carrington event happened in 1859, and we'll get into some of the details on that. But it basically is a good lead-in to a discussion on a lights-out scenario. And that could be for whatever reason. It doesn't matter if it was it's for an ice storm or a solar flare or an EMP. It's a prolonged lights-out scenario and kind of how we can prepare for it, how we can become more resilient in our lives. So this Carrington event happened, like I said, in September of 1859. And what it was is basically a coronal mass ejection that came off the sun, which is a burst of charged plasma that was aimed and happened to strike the Earth. And when those particles hit our magnetosphere, they triggered an especially fierce geomagnetic storm. It lit up the sky, it frazzled communication wires around the world. Now, at that time, obviously it was just telegraphs and things like that, mostly telegraphs. And of course, it did cause major havoc in the telegraph system of that time. If such an event were to hit the Earth today, it would wreak havoc on power grids, pipelines, and satellites. Worst case scenario, it could leave 20 million to 40 million people without power, possibly for years, as utilities, they struggle to replace thousands of transformers. And that seems to be the critical vulnerability in the system. It's these transformers that take a long time to manufacture. We don't have a lot of spare transformers and those kinds of things. And by the way, this is not lurid sci-fi or fantasy. A lot of people are talking about this. Okay, it's not some tin foil hat wearing conspiracy theory. You know, this is a real possibility. Okay, so in fact, Lloyd's of London, the world's oldest insurance market, is doing major research on this as we speak. And even they use the example of a 1989 solar-induced geomagnetic storm, and that left 6 million people in Quebec without power for many, many hours, and that was just a blip compared to the Carrington event. So we must at least look at this and learn from it, and how do we harden our systems? How do we make our electrical grid more resilient? Or how do we as individuals make our own lives more resilient by looking at such an event? The financial impact of something like this would be astronomical. Some people estimate upwards of $2.6 trillion. And think of it in this, as far as context, Hurricane Sandy caused about $65 billion in damage. So it's just astronomical. So, you know, this type of thing has really piqued scientific interest in solar storms for many years, and there's also the idea of the EMP. Now, I'm not going to talk about the EMP, and that's simply a nuclear weapon that is detonated at altitude in order to wreak havoc on the electrical systems. It basically destroys many electrical components that are not specifically hardened for electromagnetic pulse. So what does this mean? We have businesses, we have government agencies. They're taking a look at this more seriously. They're looking at the electrical grid. They're trying to figure out ways to decentralize it, to harden it, those kinds of things. We have a lot of vulnerabilities that we need to address because it would be a massive disruption. Because the reality is that we are tied to our electrical grid. We have become, quite frankly, weak because of it. Not because it's a bad thing to have electricity, because it is so reliable that we're utterly dependent upon it. We are just sure that when we flip the switch, the power is going to come on. And it's because it is so reliable and we have such a good electrical grid system, not that it's not vulnerable, but that it's reliable and it provides power, and it has for so long that we've simply become dependent upon it. And so we're not resilient in that way. In 1859, a lot of the world barely missed a beat because they didn't utilize electricity hardly at all. I mean, it was these tiny little things, the telegraphs and things like that, that people were communicating. Many people weren't even using that. You know, most people weren't using that. So today it would be much, much more devastating. And so we have to look at this. You know, just imagine a year without power. I mean, that would be massive. Without the ability to basically preserve food, because most of us simply preserve food by putting it in the refrigerator or putting it in the freezer. You lose that ability, we're talking major issues. And even, believe it or not, there is an EMP caucus in the Senate. It's comprised of Republicans and Democrats, and they are looking at this issue not only from the perspective of a weaponized EMP, but also solar flares. So, I mean, the disruption to the electrical grid, the vulnerability of our grid, those kinds of things. So this is, like I said, this is not some whacked out idea in conspiracy theory. So it's something that we should look at. But what was very interesting and what brought me to this topic was that I got my magazine. And I get a couple different magazines. Backwoods Home is my favorite. And I also get Hobby Farm. Hobby Farm magazine is, it's not a prepper or survivalist magazine. It is rural living for pleasure and profit. I mean, Hobby Farm magazine expects you to be able to go to Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever gardening store and go get your organic fertilizer, okay? But it was very interesting to me that they had an article in their magazine called Lights Out. And it says, preparing your farm for a blackout means you won't feel the pain as acutely should that day come. And interestingly, they use the Carrington event. They use the possibility of an EMP, or for whatever reason, that if you have a long-term lights out situation, and just making your homestead or your farm more resilient. So that's really what led me to it. And it's just really good common sense preparedness stuff. And in fact, all of these things, even if you did all these things and this type of an event never occurred, you would still be better off for it, okay? Because this is just how people used to live. They used to have food and water stored up. They used to be able to take care of their own security and their own communications, those kinds of things, you know, the ability to have shelter, keep themselves warm, all these common sense things that we don't think of today because we have this ultra reliable electricity via the grid. So this article covers these five things. And that's what I want to talk about today, is these five common sense preparedness items that will help you be more resilient, more adaptive, and more self-sufficient, whether you're on a homestead, a farm, or you're in a city. It doesn't really matter. And those five things are water, food, warmth, security, and communication. Okay? So the first thing is water. So for an extended outage, one of your first actions should be to secure water. And actually, that's not true. Before you ever have an outage, you should have water secured. So, for example, if you have a rainwater catchment system set up and ready to go, where you collect rainwater, whether it right now it's just to water the gardens or anything like that, take care of your animals, all those kinds of things would be, with that in place, would help you become more resilient should the power go out, should you lose your city water, should you lose your well pump, you know, all those kinds of things if you don't have a backup pump. This is why I recommend other sources of water besides just your well or city water, etc. And also in addition to just storing water. So for example, if you had 5-gallon containers filled with water stored away, great. Not a problem, but that eventually would run out as well if you had an extended lights out situation. Something like a Carrington event could potentially do that. So things like cisterns, capturing rainwater, and being able to place them in the cisterns, large storage collection like that. But in addition to that, you would maybe even be able to dig ponds or swales, those kinds of things where you can store large amounts of water. And that could be for your animals and those kinds of things. But, you know, here's the thing. With cisterns and capturing rainwater, these kinds of things, all of this is good regardless of this, of something like this ever happens or not. It helps you conserve your usage. Okay, so even when times are good, it would help you to save money, whether you're on city water, just paying for water, or even if you're on a well, it takes power to run that well. So you're saving money on electricity because your well pump doesn't have to pump as much. So it's a good idea anyway, and a great backup. So those kinds of things are real important. You need to be prepared and think about if you have animals, how would you be able to do that long term? So you have to have multiple strategies when it comes to water. This is the most important thing besides shelter. So think through these things and just think, okay, just ask yourself the theoretical question. How would I do this in an extended period of time? How would I have a reliable source of steady water? Am I going to, you know, do I have a stream on my property? Do I have a lake that's nearby? And even then, it's going to be very, very tough to have to go somewhere to get water. Okay, so think about these things. And if you're in a locale where the laws and regulations prohibit water collection, then you might, guess what? Maybe it's time that you took up that cause and look at a way to do it. And there's a lot of times there's exemptions for homeowners for small usage. I mean, do what you can. And also be prepared to purify water. Okay, because if you lose your well water, you lose city water, you're going to have to use likely surface water of some kind, whether it's rainwater collection, out of your ponds, out of your pools, you know, whatever the case may be, you need to be able to purify it. So whether it's boiling or many other methods, and having something like a Berkey water filter is always a good thing for drinking water. Okay, so that covers water. And the second thing is food. Food for this type of an event. And again, we're talking extremes here. So if the lights were out, say for a year, life would get very tough very quick. So the typical American home stores roughly enough food to last 1 week. And that's your average. You know, for many people, it's less than that. You know, for some people, maybe it's 2 weeks. But that's nothing. You know, and so you need to think about this kind of a thing. Would it harm you? Would your life be worse off if you stored 6 months worth of food or a year's worth of food? I mean, most people kind of balk at that. But again, why? Well, it's because we have cheap oil, we have cheap energy, and everything is predicated on that. That cheap energy goes away, or that energy goes away, all of a sudden, you know, that's not a silly proposition anymore. Plus, it's money in the bank. I mean, that food storage that you have is a type of investment. And granted, it's not gaining interest, but it's also not getting more expensive either. And so a year from now, when you're paying more money for food at the grocery store than what you had stored already, then, you know, that's money you could have saved. And the reality is if you start buying in bulk and doing things like that, you're going to get it cheaper anyway. So it's something to think about. So food, what is, you know, it's up to you how much you store. I mean, I would love to get to a point where we have a year's worth of food storage. And I know that sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, but something that we would want to work towards. We don't have it right now. But I think even just 6 months would be great for everyone. Because even if something like you lose a job and now you have to live off your emergency fund, which hopefully you have, well, that 6 months worth of food storage will sure help out. You know, that makes you more resilient. And so food, and you need to think about that. You need to think about storage of food, vermin-proofing it, using the right types of containers to be able to store it. And with that is also learn how to preserve food. And you don't have to get all crazy. You can do things like canning, dehydrating food, things like that. You know, we're not talking about freeze-drying and all kinds of advanced methods. We're talking about canning and dehydrating. Now, don't get me wrong. Canning, there's an art to it, and that's a really important skill, and it's probably not a real basic skill, knowing what types of things to can and how and all that. So something to think about. A great little hobby to pick up. Also, for your livestock, if you've got livestock, if you're on a homestead, if you've got chickens, if you've got cows, stuff you need to think about. Are you self-sufficient? Are you able to feed them for a while? And part of this, everything that we're talking about in preparedness, gives you time to think. When you, and I want to use the example of a job loss. If you lose a job, yet you have 3 to 6 months worth of, you know, everybody always says this, have 3 to 6 months worth of expenses to be able to pay all that. If you've got that, then you're not going to panic right away. And you have time just to sit, assess the situation, come up with a plan, and start implementing that plan. If you don't have any savings and you're totally living paycheck to paycheck and you lose your job, you are going to lose your mind. Okay, and so we don't want that. So be prepared and develop these types of things because it gives you resiliency. It helps you to become more self-sufficient and able to adapt to these types of things that happen in our lives. And so food, I'm not going to sit here and go, this is an entire series of podcasts in its own right, but more than just food storage. Okay, that's mostly what we're talking about right now, but if you have a way to grow your own food, that's ultimately what's sustainable. Even having a year's worth of food stored is not sustainable. You're sustainable for a year. But if you're growing some of your own food and you have 6 months or a year or even just a few months worth of food, that gives you a little bit of cushion, a little bit of room to be able to figure things out. Okay, so you want to do that. The next thing is warmth. Heat is vital. Okay, and again, obviously this depends on where you live, and I'm a little bit biased being up here in northern Idaho where it gets cold, but any area like this, any cold climate area or even cool climate area, it's crucial to be able to stay warm. And just think about that for a minute. An extended lights out, you don't have electricity, you're not going to have a furnace, and those kinds of things, unless you have propane. But again, even that, you know, how much propane do you have stored? Those kinds of things would likely all stop. So what's your long-term solution? Well, in most cases, it's going to have to be wood burning if you want a long-term sustainable situation. And what that means now is even if you have a pretty small lot, you know, plant trees. There's lots of trees that grow quickly that can be used for fuel wood that you can coppice and things like that. All good things to think about. We have the ability to stay warm here, even if the lights were out. Now, this is one area where we're doing pretty well in. We live in a very forested area, a lot of hardwood trees on our own property, and just a ton of trees in the area that we live in. But even then, I still want to grow some fuel wood. So I will probably grow different types of fuel wood that I can coppice. If nothing else, that I can learn the skill, even though I have a plethora of wood here. But we have the ability to stay warm. And then consider, and I mentioned this actually yesterday when I was talking about the ice storm, is you might not be able to cool or heat your entire home. Okay, and that's one thing that in America we are so used to. It's we have our central heat and air, and we cool and we warm the entire house, all the square footage. It doesn't matter if you only use 20% of all your heated square feet. We heat and cool all of it, which was a huge difference in Japan, where they really look at just heating or cooling specific zones and heating and cooling the person. And so what I mean by that is they'd have many rooms that were not air conditioned, for example. Only if they were using that room, and then they'd turn it on. But it was really broken down into by zones, and they were a lot more efficient that way. You know, that's just the truth. And again, why? Because we have cheap energy. We have ultra reliable electricity in the United States, and it's easy. And so we do it, and so we build the way we do, all based on cheap, ultra reliable electricity. If that were to go away, we'd have major problems. Okay, so the next item besides warmth is security. You know, in this kind of a situation, human nature is going to come to the surface. It's just true. Okay, people will brutalize others. They will commit crime in order to preserve their own self-interest, to put it that way. So security needs to be a part of your preparedness. So they, you know, whether you have firearms and ammunition and the training with that, it is highly recommended. And again, you need to look at your area, what's legal, what's not legal. In most places in the United States, it is obviously legal to own a firearm in your home. Maybe that you can't carry or necessarily do that in particular states outside of your home, but usually in your home, you are allowed to own a firearm. I know there's lots of restrictions in bigger cities and in certain states like California, etc. Now, for me personally, I wouldn't live there. And to me, that should come into your decision making as you think through these types of things. How do you want to live your life? How are you going to defend your family? These types of things you need to think about. Now, once again, security, protection, firearms, a series of podcasts all in their own right. So we will not belabor that here today, but you should have a means of providing security for you and your family. A final section here today is communication. And again, we could go into great depth on this, and we won't, but the point here is that you have the ability to, you maintain the ability to communicate in an extended lights-out situation. So how can you do that? Well, obviously, if we don't have power, we don't have the ability to work. Cell phones, cell networks are down, those types of things. Then we are in a situation where this has been diminished significantly. So if you have your own very small system of providing electricity, that's a great thing. It's something to think about. So a small solar system, enough to maintain a couple of handheld radios, GMRS radios, would be a bonus. It would be a plus. But then just establishing these ways to communicate with your family, with your neighbors, ahead of time is the way to go. So establishing good kind of almost protocols for that. So that is one thing that I want to end up with today or finish on, is that just at least thinking through this problem. So we have this ability to communicate. So we have water, food, security, warmth, and the ability to communicate with those around us, our loved ones and our neighbors. Think through these elements to build a more resilient and self-sufficient life.
Our scripture for today comes from Proverbs chapter 27, verses 1 through 3. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. Let another praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips. A stone is heavy, and sand is weighty, but a fool's provocation is heavier than both.
This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.